Well, it's a pleasure to be here this morning. It was a little astounding, as Peter mentioned, that as of next year, I will have been retired from this church 10 years. It seems like it was just a little while ago, but time flies. And I must admit, I am enjoying retirement. This morning's topic, awash in beauty, seeing spiritual grace, seeking spiritual grace, or stop, look, and listen. Phil Schulz, president of the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, tells of a story that in January of 1912, one of every three workers of the American Woolen Company in Lawrence, Mass. Died before the age of 25. For the previous 7 years, wages and living standards had been in steady decline until by 1912, wages stood at an average of $8.76 for a full week. Few workers could afford more than bread, molasses, and beans for their diet. Finally spurred on by the international workers of the world, the workers struck. The reaction of the authorities to the strike was harsh and severe. And as the police, billy clubs, and fire hoses rained down upon them, the striking women chanted, "We want bread, but we want roses too." James Oppenheim turned that cry into a famous poem, and over the years that phrase, "bread and roses," was adopted by others, beginning with the Irish Labour Party, until today it stands for the importance of both beauty and justice to the full realization of the human calling. There are many avenues to incorporate the spiritual in our lives. The spiritual is that dimension that provides reflection upon grace that exists in our ordinary days. As the women woolen workers chanted, "We want bread and roses too," the religious life includes helping others so that all may have the symbolic elements of bread, with substantial food, decent lodging, and a sense of opportunity. The North Shore Church, with its relatively small numbers and resources, has been particularly successful in serving these community needs. This morning, I want to talk about the roses in the Bread and Roses chant. For me, one dimension of the roses is the need for beauty in our lives. Now, beauty seems like a soft topic, because, of course, everyone enjoys beauty. Some say the real religious topics should be those that deal with injustice and hardship. But again, I begin with Bill's reading because I want to emphasize that social issues are important, but the spiritual life also includes the beauty of the roses. In the reading, Rollo May describes why beauty is so important to us. Beauty is the experience that gives us a sense of joy and a sense of peace simultaneously. Other happenings give us joy and afterwards a peace. But in beauty, these are the same experience. Beauty is serene and at the same time exhilarating. It increases one's sense of being alive. This topic is especially important to me. And some of you know my background. Pursuing beauty has changed my life. Like many of you of my generation, I was raised in a household where there was little reading, no music per se, and very little cultural activity. I had the good fortune that I could draw, and so I had the opportunity to go to architecture school. I was raised in a suburban area in the 50s, and everything was kind of bland. But at Syracuse University, I met a number of young people who were from New York City. They were much more sophisticated than I was. They had been to art museums. They had heard classical concerts. But fortunately for me, they were willing to share. And so I learned about these things, and as a result, I became a convert. Kind of like a traditional religious person, I was reborn to the world of beauty that I was unaware of previously. At first, it wasn't easy, and I remember going back to my hometown, to my old high school buddies, and making fun of these people and saying, "Oh, they used to talk about sunsets." And then I realized that soon I was one of those who was talking about the sunsets. It's my contention that beauty is a spiritual force. And I don't mean just going to see pictures at a museum or going to a classical concert. I'm talking about every day. Thomas More talks about this in his book, Care of the Soul. The assumption that beauty is an accessory and dispensable shows that we don't understand the importance of giving the soul what it needs. The soul is nurtured by beauty. But food is to the body, arresting, complex, and pleasing images are to the soul. If we have a psychology rooted in the medical view of human behavior and emotional life, then the primary value will be health. But if our idea of psychology is based on the soul, then the goal of our therapeutic efforts will be beauty. Beauty assists the soul in its own particular ways of being. For example, beauty is arresting. For the soul, it is important to be taken out of the rush of practical life for the contemplation of timeless and eternal realities. Tradition named this soul vacation, a vacation from the ordinary activity in favor of a moment of reflection and wonder. You may find yourself driving through a highway when you suddenly pass a vista that catches your breath. You stop the car. Get out for just a few moments and behold the grandeur of nature. This is the arresting power of beauty. And giving into it, that sudden longing of the soul is a way of giving what it needs. Discussions of beauty can sometimes sound ethereal and philosophical. But from the soul viewpoint, beauty is a necessary part of ordinary life. If we are going to care for the soul, and if we know that the soul is nurtured by beauty, then we will have to understand beauty more deeply and give it a more prominent place in our lives. Now, there are many forms of daily beauty. Music in all its forms. My favorite is classical, but folk, rock, jazz, contemplative are all sources. The arts, literature, dance, drama. Even science, scientists talk about beautiful formulas and equations, and certainly people, both in outer appearance, but more importantly, in their inner life, their radiance and generosity and empathy. Certainly friends and family, even though it can be exasperating at times, our children are great sources of joy. This morning, I want to emphasize two specific forms of beauty, sight and sound. What we see and what we hear. Seeking and enjoying beauty as a spiritual practice is important in my entire life. I can remember going back to my years in college. Before I was able to work in an architectural office in the summer, I worked in an industrial bakery. It wasn't a time before machines were created for this task, and I would stand between a warming oven with bread going around and then take it from the warming oven and move it into the cooking oven. You can imagine now there would be a machine for this activity, but can you imagine working on a summer job without air conditioning between two ovens? It was sweaty, it was greasy, it was bad. But I survived by memorizing poetry. And one of the poems I especially remember was one entitled Leisure by William Henry Davies. He said, "What is this life if full of care? We have no time to stand and stare. No time to stand beneath the boughs and stare as long as sheep or cows. No time to see when woods we pass, where squirrels hide their nuts in grass. No time to see in broad daylight, streams full of stars like stars of night. No time to turn at beauty's glance, and watch her feet, how they can dance. A poor life this, if full of care, we have no time to stand and stare. No time to stand and stare. Or as is stated on the old railroad crossings, we need to take the time to stop, look, and listen. One of the joys of retirement for me has been the increased opportunity for beauty in my life. More freedom to listen to music, take walks, see the ocean, go to museums. Now you could say, well, that's easier in retirement, but I work every day. But even when I worked in an architectural office more than 40 hours a week, I made time to leave early. For a time, I worked in Oakland, a very industrial area, where there didn't seem to be many opportunities for beauty, but I found an Episcopal church down the street, a traditional church, with an all-wood interior, and I'd leave early so that I'd have maybe 15 minutes to just sit there and enjoy the beauty of the day before my work time began. And from time to time, for lunch, instead of going out with everyone, I would go to the local park just to enjoy the beauty of the day. When I served here as minister, many of you know I used to stop at Hood Pond on my way to the office here for a time of reflection. Or if I had a meeting in Beverly or stopping at the hospital, I would make a point of going over to Dane Beach. My plea this morning is for you to do similar things, to stop, look and listen, be open to the many avenues of beauty. There are perhaps avenues that you can open up to beyond the ones you're aware of. One of the ones I share is there was a time when I didn't enjoy flowers. Sorry, Marion, but but now I've been converted. At the time, to me, they just seemed too pretty, too cute, too conventional, too sentimental. I didn't like the idea just because they were supposed to be beautiful that I was supposed to enjoy them. I'm not sure when I suddenly acknowledged and began to enjoy the beauty of flowers. Perhaps Ann Millender of this church, when she had so many years of beautiful flower presentations, was one of the influences. I realized, yes, flowers really are beautiful. They have lovely shapes and vivid colors, more vivid than most paintings I see in a museum. I think of a short poem by Bajaj Jaha. He says, "When you look carefully, a flower is all it is. To me, flowers are the eyes of the earth regarding us with bright surprise." Now, flowers are important in my life. They've always been important to Marge, and we've always enjoyed them in the house. Fresh flowers are not just part of the background of our daily house, but we take the time to really see them each day. Now, I know I'm not alone in trying to find new ways of finding beauty. I have a friend who's an architect, Don, trained in the visual arts, but he's lived his entire life in New York City. Yearly, we have a gathering with a friend of mine, Fred, who lives out in the country in Vermont. When we go there, we all expand about how wonderful it is to see the hills, the lake. We go, at the trees and the woods and the sky. But my newer friend Don says, "I don't see it." He says he actually understands how we might enjoy it, but it just isn't that interesting to him. I think he's losing out on an opportunity for beauty. In my years of ministry, I've always been aware that beauty is an important part of the history of Unitarian Universalists, but somehow got lost along the way. Many churches, for years, and including the predecessor church of this church, used to sing a doxology that said, "Truth, goodness, and beauty." But the current Unitarian Universalist principles have no mention of beauty, either in the principles or as in their inspiration. We have become a denomination of the Word. For many years, I served as chair of the denomination's pamphlet commission, and we would argue over every possible word, every little comma. But as an architect, I was aware that how the pamphlet looked would have an important influence on whether it was picked up by others. But most of the members of the committee said, "Oh, don't worry about that. That's just a matter of taste. It doesn't matter how it looks." Well, I think it does matter. Beauty needs to be in all our dimensions of life. And as many of you know, I'm an architect by background. And beauty in architecture is a good example of the need for bread and roses. The bread of a building is its walls and roof and doors and windows, and they are absolutely necessary. It's what we build on. But more than that, for our home and work, play and church, we need more than that. We need the beauty of a church architecture. I've always been drawn to church architecture. The traditional religion and its buildings often have wonderful structures. They have space and steeples and sculptures and windows and decoration, always with an emphasis on beauty. Most religions create a beautiful setting, which our souls need. It's a combination of sight and sound that gives power to a worship service. It's a combination of the beauty of music, which we're hearing today from Bonnie. And something ministers don't like to talk much about, but it is speculated that 60% of the success of worship is based on its music, not necessarily on its sermons. This is all the more enhanced when it's a beautiful space, such as this lovely setting, beautiful church set on a wooded hill. One of the reasons I especially enjoy the ocean is that combination again of sight and sound. We see the vistas, the horizon, the waves, the sky, but also the endless variation in mood of sound, from quiet lapping waves to warm, roaring storm breakers. My question this morning, are you feeding your souls each day with beauty? Do you see the beauty in paintings, and I don't mean just in museums, but in your own home? Sculpture, architecture, again, not just in Boston, but in your own hometown. Do you see the beauty in amazing nature, especially as it comes alive in spring? Sunrise and sunset, sky, flowers, trees, mountains, oceans, lakes, streams. Do you hear the beauty of music? Do you hear the beauty in the sounds of nature? Are there new areas of beauty you could explore and enjoy, or perhaps an old form that you'd like to revitalize? Why not resolve to start today, to be more aware, to stop, to look, to listen? As Thomas More reminded us, our souls are nurtured by beauty. In this service, the opening words tell us to be thankful for this day of beauty. The meditation reminds us to see and hear the beauty of the world. Rollo May writes, beauty is the experience that gives us a sense of joy and peace simultaneously. And the hymn, for the beauty of the earth extols the joy of ear and eye, for the mystic harmony linking sense to sound and sight. When I wake up in the morning, I find there's a tendency, even in retirement, to think of the tasks I need to do that day. But I know I also need to ask, what beauty will I seek? Will I go to the ocean, enjoy my woodland setting, go for a walk in the fresh air? During the day when I forget to seek beauty, I find the sky can be a reminder. If I really see the sky, it reminds me to seek out beauty. A reminder to stop, look, and listen. And at the end of the day, laying in bed, going to sleep, I find it comforting and relaxing to think of the beautiful experiences I've had during the day. Tonight it could be thinking of Bonnie's music, the delight of this space, a ride to the ocean, a walk to experience spring blossoming everywhere. And now the whole prayer reminds us of the possibilities of beauty everywhere, that we are awash in beauty. Beauty is before me, and beauty is behind me. Above me and below me hovers the beautiful. I am surrounded by it. I am immersed in it. In my youth, I am aware of it. In an old age, I shall walk quietly the beautiful trail. In beauty, it is begun. In beauty, it is ended. In conclusion, as Thomas More writes, an appreciation for beauty is simply an openness to the power to stir the soul. If we can be affected by beauty, then our soul is alive and well in us, because the soul's great talent is for being affected. And in beauty, we can bring our souls to spiritual fulfillment.